Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the meeting to order. As is the custom, I need to read procedural item for virtual meetings. In accordance with Governor Lamont's executive order regarding public meetings held via teleconference, the meeting will be recorded and the recording will be posted on Chief's website within 7 days of the meeting. I will now do a roll call. So for the minutes, we can address who's at the meeting. I will start with board members. Starting with myself, Peter Lisi is present. Mike Angelini.
Present.
Thank you. Lawrence Davis.
Present.
Thank you. Steve Elbaum.
Present.
Thank you. Daryl Hill. Daryl? Estella Lopez.
I don't know.
Estella is present.
Here.
Kim Kennison?
Here.
Thank you. Susan Martin?
I'm here.
Thank you. Alan Matamana? Alan? Mark Vaholak? Mark? No. Okay, Chief of Staff, Jeanette Weldon.
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. Denise Aguilera.
Here.
Deb Galley.
Here.
Dan Junji.
Present.
Thank you. Bob Jandro.
Present.
Thank you. Krista Johnson. Krista? No. Dan Kurowski.
Present.
Thank you. Eileen McDonald.
Present.
Thank you. Michael Morris.
Present.
Cynthia Peoples.
I'm here.
Kara Stewart.
Here.
Betty Weintraub.
Here.
Is there anyone else representing Chifa or Chesla whose name I didn't call?
Joanne is here.
Thank you, Joanne. Anyone else? Okay. Regarding consultants and advisors, if I call your company name, if you're on the line, could you please identify yourself? Acacia Financial?
Josh Nikita.
I'm sorry, who is that?
Josh Nikita.
Josh, thank you. Carmody Torrance?
Ann Zucker's here.
Thank you, Ann. Cohen Resnick? Cohen Resnick? Dave Pitney? No. Hardwick Law Firm?
Yes, it's Mary Jo Kelly.
Thank you. Hawkins, Delafield & Wood? Anyone? Hinckley Allen?
Tom Marion here.
Thank you. McCarter & English?
Tiffany Stevens is here.
Thank you. PFM, Public Finance Management, Financial Management.
Trina Smith.
One more time, the name.
Sorry, Trina Smith is here.
Thank you, Trina. Pullman Conway.
Good afternoon, Eric Russell is here.
Thank you. Robinson and Cole.
Hi, Ed Timmer, I took it on.
Thank you, and Shipman Goodwin.
Yes, Bruce Chadwick is on.
Okay. Is there anyone other than Chief's board members, staff, whose name I didn't call that is on the line? Anyone else? Okay, thank you. We can proceed to the agenda. First item of business, we have three sets of minutes to review and approve. First item is the minutes from April 1st, 2021. Is there a motion to accept the minutes?
Motion.
We've got a motion and a second. Are there any second edits, clarifications, or changes to the minutes from April 1st? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? Thank you very much. Motion passes. Minutes are approved. Next item are minutes from April 21st, 2021. Is there a motion to accept?
Yes. So move, Kim Kennison.
Thank you, Kim. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a second. Thank you. There's a motion and a second to approve the minutes as presented from our April 21st meeting. Are there any corrections or edits or discussion to those, to that motion regarding those minutes? Anything? Hearing none, all those in favor of accepting the motion as for the minutes as presented, please say aye.
Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? All right, we're getting good at this. We have one more set. We have minutes from May 4th, 2021. And I would entertain a motion to accept those minutes.
Motion to accept, it's Kim.
Thank you, Kim. Is there a second? I'll second it. We got a second. Are there any corrections or edits to the minutes from May 4th? Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of accepting the minutes from May 4th as presented, please say aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you very much. We got through the minutes. Can I go home now?
No.
Okay, just kidding. Michael, higher ed sector report. The floor is yours.
All right, can you hear me?
I can.
All right, good. All righty. Next slide, please. All right, the results for fiscal year 2020 for the higher ed sector is much better than what I would have thought of last March, and what many would have thought, but the pandemic is still going to have a very long-lasting effect. Despite the market crash in March, investment performance improved, with 7 of the 10 institutions increasing their total cash and investments. Financial resources are adequate for debt and operations, although they're not as strong as Moody's median. Operating performance was obviously hit the hardest with the loss of auxiliary revenue. Expense cuts and federal funding helped, but the decline in operating cash flow margins affected debt service coverage. However, the third round on relief funds should be provide much needed relief for these institutions. As far as student demand, decrease in applications of 3.8% from 2020, but in 2020 it was at its all-time high. With the decline in application, there's a very slight increase in selectivity mean, but matriculation rates remain very low, and also endowment declined approximately 3% from the prior year. Looking at our portfolio for the higher ed sector of $4.73 billion, it represents about 58% of CHIFA's total portfolio. Yale accounts for 62% of the total outstanding for the sector, followed by Quinnipiac and then Sacred Heart University. Unenhanced issues make up about 90% of the portfolio, and that's up 11% from 5 years ago. Seen a decline in private placements as more of these institutions have gone unenhanced. And you compare that, compare the higher ed portfolio to the total outstanding portfolio, it pretty much mirrors each other with the exception of the private placements, which is mainly made up of the independent school sector. Okay, next slide. Oh, okay. We missed a slide, I'm sorry. That was for the portfolio overview. All right, now the next, there you go, thank you. 9 of the 10 schools have their own rating. University of St. Joseph is the only one that doesn't have a rating and most likely would be below investment grade. See changes there in yellow, highlighted in yellow there. Trinity was downgraded by Moody's from A1 to A2 last March with their 2020 offering. Quinnipiac's outlook was revised from positive to stable in September 2020. And Fairfield's outlook was revised from stable to positive by Moody's in late 2019. Standard & Poor's downgraded the University of New Haven from BBB to BBB-, and University of Hartford received a rating with their 2019 offering of BBB-. Okay, next slide, please.
Mike, can I ask you a question on that? Sorry.
Absolutely.
Can we just go back to, I'm just kind of curious, just a very minor thing. For the University of Hartford, it has a rating, but not an outlook. I mean, with St. Joe's, it doesn't have a rating, so I understand why it wouldn't have an outlook.
No,
why would University of Hartford have a rating but not an outlook?
No, that you're correct. That should be a stable outlook. This is a carryover from the last presentation that didn't have a rating. But
okay.
It is stable.
Okay. Thank you.
As far as bond issuance, since 2017, we closed 21 bond issues, consisting of 31 series of bonds totaling $2.4 billion. Approximately two-thirds were refundings. However, 7 of the 10 institutions had new money issues. And Yale accounted for approximately 52% of the total issued, followed by Sacred Heart at over 14%. In this fiscal year 2021, we've only closed 2 bond issues totaling $150 million. And we really don't have any others in the pipeline that I know of that will be issuing it in the near future. There was a total of over 130,000 applications that were received in 2021. As I mentioned before, it's down 3.8% from the prior year. But in fiscal year 2020, there was over 135,000 applications. It was up at its all-time high. All but 3 institutions experienced a decline from the prior year in application. Quinnipiac had the largest decline of 12.6% from the prior year, followed by Wesleyan and Yale at approximately 4.5%. Fairfield University reported an increase in each of the past 5 years, the only institution to do so. University of St. Joseph's applications nearly doubled from 5 years ago, mainly as their decision to go in co-educational. But you can see their applicant pool is very small at just under 1,600. With the decline in applications from the prior year, as I mentioned, the selectivity median increased slightly, with only 1 institution being more selective in fiscal year 2021 than 2020. You can see the wide range there from Yale at 6.5% all the way up to the University of New Haven at over 91%. Matriculation median decreased from the prior year and is down from a high of 22.2% from 3 years ago, and with 7 of the 10 institutions reporting a lower yield than the prior year. And we only have 4 institutions that are above Moody's median of 19.5%. Connecticut College also has seen a decline over the past 5 years, down from 22.9%, and the University of St. Joseph down from 19.5% to 15%. As far as enrollment, we don't have a slide, but total enrollment declined 2.9% from the prior year, but is in pretty much in line with the 4-year prior average. Notable declines include Yale at 11.5% from last year, and Connecticut College down 7% from the prior year. All right, next slide. Here, we gotta go down one more slide. Yeah, we seem to be off here. Okay. All right. For spendable cash and investments, financial resources, I mentioned before, continue to grow, 2.4% greater than last year and 25.7% over the past 5 years. Yale and Wesleyan account for approximately 94% of the total cash and investments of the portfolio. When you look at the spendable cash and investments to debt ratio, median is 40% lower than Moody's, and we only have 4 institutions equal above Moody's medium of 2.03 times. We have 3 institutions that are with available financial resources that are less than the amount of debt outstanding. So that's University of New Haven, University of St. Joseph, and Sacred Heart. When you look at the ratio cushion for operations, the median at 1.5 times, it's comparable to Moody's meeting at 1.41 times. I have 0.9 times in the slide. It should be 1.41 times. So it's pretty much equivalent to Moody's. But we do have three institutions that have less than 1 year to cover operations. Okay, next slide. When you're looking at financial resources on a more liquid basis, looking at values, cash on hand on a monthly basis, see the chief of median at 366 days exceeds Moody's median of 344 days. The median has increased 4.6% from the prior year, and it's at its highest level in the past 5 years, and it's 39% higher than it was 5 years ago. 9 out of 10 institutions improved their days cash on hand from the prior year. And over the past 5 years, some notable increases included University of St. Joseph doubling their number of days, and Connecticut College increasing 50%, and Quinnipiac University improving 47.5%. Next slide. We have 6 institutions that experienced a decline in net tuition for 2020. That contributed to the median decline from a 3.8% increase to a negative 0.7% decrease in net tuition. See net tuition growth for both 2 to 5% increase and greater than 5% decline from 4 institutions to 1 in each of those categories. All right, that's about all on that one. So next slide, please. All right. Based on the lower net tuition, contributed to the decline for both operating margin and operating cash flow margin, median from the prior year. Both are at their lowest levels in the past 5 years. The operating margin is equivalent to Moody's median, and the operating cash flow margin is just below Moody's. We have 4 institutions with operating losses in fiscal 2020 compared to 1 institution 5 years ago. Only 3 institutions improved their operating margins from 5 years ago. But I should note that even though CHIPA's medians are at the lowest in the past 5 years, Moody's margins medians are also at the lowest level in the past 5 years as well. Next slide. And with the decline in the operating cash flow margin, and with 8 institutions experienced a decline in coverage from the last year. However, debt service is still manageable with a debt service coverage ratio median of 2.9 times and exceeds Moody's median of 2.74 times. Although the debt service appears manageable, debt service, when you look at the debt service operations ratio, is still high at 5.5%. And we have 7 of the 10 institutions debt service to operation is above Moody's 5%. Okay, as far as next slide, capital spending ratio. For 2020, we had 8 institutions that invested more in their plant than their depreciation expense, with the median capital ratio improving to 2.0 times. This is the highest level in the past 5 years. Yale accounts for 60% of the total capital investment for the portfolio. It'd be interesting to see what that is like for fiscal 2021. I bet both of those metrics will be down. We have, in addition, we have the average age of plant has been steadily increasing from 2016 from 13.1 years to 17.2 years. And the average age of plant ranged from 11 years for Sacred Heart University to over 25 years for Wesleyan University. And next slide, as far as Moody's outlook, this was presented in your package. Very surprisingly, in March of this year, they revised the outlook from negative to stable, projecting revenue growth, feeling that as students return to campus, the auxiliary income should increase, but still predicting weaker net tuition growth. And like I mentioned before, additional relief should help. And overall economic growth should help as far as affordability and also for philanthropic donations. I think that overall the sector remains very challenged. I don't know if Mark had joined. I would love to hear from him as far as what his thoughts are. But it's, you know, they're going to have to still look at their business models and how they operate. It's still going to be, I think, a very challenging time for them. And that is about it.
Any questions for Mike? Anything? Well, Mike, I have one. It might be more appropriate for a rating agency, but I'd be curious to your thoughts. You know, with University of Hartford going from D1 to D3, how might a rating agency look at that in terms of their overall, I mean, the impact on enrollment and whatnot, or will it not be an issue for a rating agency?
It may, but you know, they got to look at the whole picture. You know, how much, you know, revenue loss are they going to avoid with that change? But you know, it's tough to tell as far as how the impact on enrollment will be. But no, it's a good question. Be interested to know how they would view that.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Michael, higher ed sector report? Okay.
I just wanted to comment one thing.
Go ahead, Peter. Kim. Yeah, go ahead.
Michael, thank you very much for this presentation. I really enjoyed seeing all of this all pulled together and having that forward look on how our things are performing. So this is actually the first time I've seen such a report. So, boy, when I was in higher education, I wish I could have put my hands on such a report. So I want to commend you on this product.
Thank you.
Okay, anything else? All right, we've got a full agenda, so we'll keep going. Jeanette, Executive Director's Report.
Yes, thank you, Peter. And I wanted to start with an update on a new type of financing that CHIPA has been asked to undertake, and it's to serve as a conduit issuer in connection with a bond issue to help resolve the Crumbling Foundations issue. So if you recall, Crumbling Foundations is something that was, you know, all over the front pages a number of years ago, faulty concrete creating homes that had dramatically lost value, et cetera. And so CHIPA would be issuing bonds on behalf of the Connecticut Foundation Solutions Indemnity Company, which is a sponsored captive insurer that was created by the state to help resolve this Crumbling Foundations matter. And that entity, that captive insurer, is a 501c3. So as a 501c3, CHIPA can participate in a financing, you know, on behalf of the captive insurer, although our bond council believes it would need to be done on a taxable basis, and our definition of project would need to be expanded to accommodate this financing. The captive insurer actually, which became operational in January of 2019, it relies on a revenue stream that is a $12 assessment on every Connecticut homeowner's insurance policy. And those revenues are used to, are provided to homeowners so that they can fund their remediation efforts. And that surcharge generates about $10.5 million annually. So the goal is to securitize that revenue stream and use it, you know, have it be pledged to revenue bonds so that dollars can be made available upfront to homeowners rather than over time. And any bonds issued under this structure would be backed by the SCARF, so they would be state supported. So there is a proposal on the floor of the House to have CHIPA serve as the conduit issuer on behalf of bonds for the 501c3 captive insurer. And if this bill passes and becomes law, any bond issuance is not expected to occur until the fall. The transaction would be very closely managed and monitored by CHIFA, and it would be brought to the board for the full review and vetting process, which would go through, you know, our two-step approval with the preliminary presentation and then bringing it back for final approval. So I wanted to make everyone aware of this bill that's pending in the legislature currently. So are there any questions on that at this point? As I said, any transaction would not occur until the fall, and it would come to the full board for the complete review process. Okay, and then I also just wanted to give a legislative update generally, and this before I turn it over to Dan Gingy, our legislative liaison, this has been an outstanding legislative session for us from an outreach perspective. And in the past, we used to focus our meetings really on meeting with the co-chairs of the higher ed committee and some legislative leadership. But really, this session, through the efforts of Dan Gingy, our outreach has become much broader, but also more targeted in terms of the focusing on the specific proposals that we put forth in this legislative session. So not only have we had meetings either by phone or video with the higher ed leadership and ranking members of that committee, but we've had many meetings with others, leadership reps for the Finance, Revenue, and Bonding Committee, co-chairs of the Bonding Subcommittee, House Majority Leader, and others. And I would like to turn it over to Dan for some additional comments in that regard, and also a general update. So, Dan.
Thank you, Jeanette. So just to expand a little bit on the outreach that we've been engaged in throughout the session, as Jeanette indicated, not only have we met with the higher ed co-chairs, but our efforts have been comprehensive and bipartisan in nature. We've also met with the ranking members of the Higher Education Committee, and we've branched out beyond the Higher Education Committee, which is our Committee of Cognizance, to engage other committees that we may not have worked as closely with in the past, including the Education Committee. We've met with the co-chairs from that committee, as well as the co-chairs from the Banking Committee. In addition to meeting with committee leadership and legislative leadership in both the House and Senate within the Democratic and Republican caucus, we've also met with the Black and Puerto Rican caucus, and we were able to attend their annual legislative forum. And in that forum, we were able to present to about 30 legislators simultaneously and provide an overview of our agenda and answer any questions that they had. In addition to the outreach that we've been engaged in within the legislature, our efforts have also gone beyond the legislature to include groups such as talent officers. We've met with a handful of talent officers from Alliance Districts to solicit feedback for our Alliance District teacher loan subsidy proposal. We've met with the State Department of Education, and we've also engaged the legislative liaisons from major urban centers regarding our New Markets Tax Credit Program. And that includes legislative liaisons from the City of Hartford, as well as the City of New Haven. I want to touch on a handful of bills, primarily. The first is 5610. And I think just to expand a little bit and draw the linkage between our outreach efforts and this legislation, I think the effectiveness of our outreach is really evident in this particular proposal. This was a Banking Committee bill that we did have a handful of concerns with when it was initially introduced. We did meet with the Banking Committee co-chairs to voice our concerns, and we provided them with a number of suggested revisions to the legislation, which they took into account. and included in an amendment. When our Alliance District teacher loan subsidy proposal was held in the Finance Committee, and they failed to take action prior to the necessary deadline to vote the bill back to the House of the Senate, we were almost immediately contacted by the Banking Committee co-chair, Representative Doucette, and he expressed a willingness to include pieces of our legislative agenda as a strike-all amendment in this bill. So House Bill 5610 was amended yesterday on the floor of the House to include language that would establish the Chesla Alliance District Teacher Loan Subsidy Program, as well as expand the definition of education assistance as outlined in the Chesla Enabling Statutes. And again, I think the evidence and the effectiveness of our outreach was seen yesterday when the bill was brought to a vote on the floor of the House. It received 148 votes in support of the legislation. No member in the House of Representatives voted against the bill, and there were only three members absent. So I think that is a significant win, especially at this point in the session, to take into account. That bill is now in the Senate awaiting action, and we are engaging members of the Senate, including Representative Doucette's counterpart, Senator Kasser, to move that bill to a vote in the Senate and ultimately send it to the governor's desk for his signature. I want to touch on House Bill 6646. This is the crumbling foundations bill that Jeanette referenced previously. We had a handful of revisions and suggested edits that we forwarded to Representative Jeff Curry, who is the point person in the House of Representatives on this particular piece of legislation. And within this legislation, we have asked them to include an expanded definition of project as outlined in the CHIFA enabling statutes. So that would provide increased flexibility for CHIFA borrowers, as well as give CHIFA the ability to issue bonds to support CIFSIC. There are a handful of bills that would be detrimental to CHIFA that I touched on in our previous meeting. These are House Bill 6577, 6194, and 6664. I think the common theme with all three of these bills is that they seek to enact or implement reporting or additional reporting requirements and approval procedures and impose them on CHIFA. And they would be particularly cumbersome given the fact that they are duplicating procedures and approval processes that CHIFA already has in place. These bills are currently awaiting action on the floor of the House. At this point, there hasn't been a clear indication as to whether or not these will gain traction, especially as they move towards the end of the session. There's approximately 18 more days that the legislature has to meet to take action on bills. And at this point, these three bills don't appear to be a significant priority within the House or the Senate. We will continue to monitor them and keep you apprised of any developments. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. So that concludes my report. So, Peter, if there are any other questions, otherwise we can move on to the next segment.
Just a very quick question for Dan. Dan, I've forgotten, is this a short session this year or a lengthy session, long session?
This is a long session. Next year.
This is the long one? Okay, thank you.
Dan.
Okay, any other questions?
Yes, it's Kim. I have one question.
Yeah. Go ahead, Kim.
The bills that you're referring to, are those the bills that had to do with the State Contracting Standards Board oversight of contracts?
Yes.
All three of them?
There was one of them. I can't remember off the top of my head. I believe it's 6664, but I'm happy to confirm which bill number goes with that subject matter and follow up with you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Dan, okay. It's Steve Elbaum speaking. What happened with the bill that was came out of finance revenue bonding or was discussed regarding setting up another agency within CRDA to have some effect on what we and other authorities do?
That was, the bill was Senate Bill 1101. Okay. The Finance Committee did not take action on that bill prior to their joint file deadline. So that bill effectively died in committee, but the proponents of that legislation did indicate that they'd be looking to reintroduce it at some point in this session. I would imagine that would be through some type of amendment, whether it's an amendment that adds language to an existing bill or an amendment that strikes a bill in its entirety and inserts the language from 1101 into that particular piece of legislation. At this point, we have not seen an amendment introduced in the Senate that would contain that language or that contains that language, excuse me. But we have been engaged in outreach with leadership in the Senate and the House to alert them of the possibility that that language could be revived. And we've urged them, if it does come back, to take no action on it.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Dan. Michael, client update?
Sure. On the financing forecast this month, we have two new issues that we presented today, both Trinity College and University of St. Joseph. Connecticut Children's Medical Center is looking to issue $10 million through our tax-exempt equipment lease financing program, also known as the Easy Loan. We're also working on a Yale remarketing of $300 million for its 2015 issue that has a 7/12 mandatory tender date. Since last meeting, we closed CSU, CIO Community Resources, and the Indian Mountain School. We do have a number of institutions that are paying off their bonds, either with equity or with taxable financing. That includes North Free Academy. That was a 2013 issue, and it's not callable until 7/1/2023. There's about $11 million outstanding, and they're going to put funds in an escrow and defease those bonds. Kingswood Oxford is looking to pay off their 2002 issue. They have about $4.5 million left. They want to do that on June 1st. The Hopkins School is looking to pay off their 2009 issue. That has about $4 million remaining. And Middlesex Hospital is going to be paying off its 2011 issue of $5.4 million. This was debt associated with their assisted living facility that will cease operations beginning 7/1/2021. And the good news is Jerome Holm, after a 2-year hiatus, is back on track.
All right.
So we're going to get that going, but I'll believe it when I see it. So stay tuned.
Thank you, Michael. Any questions? Okay. Next item, Joanne, financial report.
All right, thank you. Good afternoon. For the 9 months ending March 31st of 2021, our operating revenues exceed our operating expenses by $3 million. Non-operating expenses are also $3 million, which results in a decrease in our net position of about $4,000. Year over year, everything again remains the same. Your change in net position, there's a difference there, and that's because of the timing of the COVID grants, which happened in March. Those were all released in March. Typically, the last grants go out in June. So our revenues are under budget by $50,000, and our expenses are under budget also by $189,000. And that's predominantly conferences that were not attended and just items that we were unable to do because of COVID.
Okay. Thank you, Joanne. Any questions?
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Cynthia, interest rate?
Yes, it is a quick update, taking a look at the yield curve. Obviously, over the year, May of 2021, the curve was slightly inverted and rather flat, and now the increase has been at least 100 basis points across the curve. Between last month in April and now, the yield curve is relatively the same. FOMC meeting minutes are due to come out. I think they may already be out given the time. But the yield curve essentially has remained flat in anticipation of that. There's obviously inflation pressures going on with the reopening of the economy as well. So it'll be interesting to see what's in the minutes and what the pressure to react based on expected inflation.
Okay. Thank you, Cynthia. Any questions? All right. Last update, Bob, market update.
Yep. Mutual fund inflows continue to be a big driving force of the municipal market. Thus far, we've had approximately $46 billion of inflows into municipal mutual funds. In the June-July period, we're going to see large reinvestment inflows, which are basically payments that are made of principal interest to investors that will be going back into the market. JP Morgan is estimating that we're going to see approximately $122 billion of those inflows come into the market. So when you combine the mutual fund inflows with the reinvestment inflows, in addition to broker-dealer inventories being at about half of what they typically are, you basically have an environment where we are continue to see strong demand exceeding supply. And what this translates into is just a further exacerbation of the lower credit spreads, lower all-in yields, and higher valuations. The transactions report for this month is fairly light, but it continues to highlight the sizable amount of taxable issuance that's coming to market. Valuations remain very favorable in the taxable market, and that's what's led to just the success and size of issuance that's come to market there.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. Any questions? Questions for Bob? Okay, thank you. Jeanette, a review of strategic plan.
Yes, and so included in your board packet was the proposed strategic plan for the upcoming three-year period, but also included, because it really sort of lays the foundation for the next 3 years, is the status report on fiscal year 2021. So as you know, we have an existing strategic plan that covered fiscal 19 through fiscal 21. And at the end of each fiscal year, we've given a status report. And so I just wanted to briefly touch on some of the achievements that we've had this fiscal year. So Deb, if you can go to the next page. And maybe increase the size of it. So I also want to mention that the staff, I think we really achieved a lot in fiscal 21, and given the fact that we've all been working remotely through the pandemic, staff has remained focused, everyone has remained very productive, and so I'm very pleased with the fact that we were able to achieve so many of the goals that we set out for the current fiscal year. So as you can see there, collaboration, the fiscal 21 goals, develop new post-collection relationships, implement a Chesler-Rizlo collaboration, and continue chief of CDC outreach activities. So I think we've already talked about what we've done on the governmental relationship side. And if you scroll down a bit further, Deb, you can see as far as chief of CDC outreach is concerned, and this has been touched on previously as well, although we were not successful this session in trying to create a Connecticut New Markets Tax Credit program, it did involve a lot of outreach, building this coalition of 25 providers plus 16 United Way organizations, and having ongoing communications with a lot of our pipeline project entities. So that piece of it will continue into the next legislative session. And then as far as Chesler collaboration is concerned, the Alliance District Teacher Loan Subsidy Program has required a lot of collaboration, not only legislatively, but also with the State Department of Education. And the CHESLA-RISLA collaboration, which is RISLA is the counterpart to CHESLA in Rhode Island, and we are jointly offering in Connecticut a student loan repayment program for employers to be able to pay down the student loans of employees as a company benefit. The next page, Deb. So the second, if you can go to pillar two, the second page, pillar two, which is the economic and workforce development, you can see the fiscal 21 goals there. And some of these have been talked about previously. So a lot of it under the CHIEF and CDC initiatives, not only did we make the efforts with regard to the Connecticut New Markets Tax Credit Program, but we also, and unfortunately we did not receive an allocation, on the federal side, which was one of the goals. But we have had a number of other initiatives, including trying to work with the Office of Early Childhood with regard to our Child Care Guaranteed Loan Fund and reinvigorate that program. We closed on three loans from our new revolving loan fund, and then philanthropic outreach in connection with the Governor's Workforce Council. And we are also working on, we've engaged a consultant to begin a process of developing a CHIEF-wide approach for data gathering to assess our impact. Scrolling down, the CHESLA initiatives there, I think have been touched on, the teacher proposal and the RISLA program. The one thing that was a goal that we have not achieved in this year was an economic impact study for CHESLA specifically, and so that's something we put put on the list for next the next strategic plan. Continuing on to the next technology, you can see the 21 goals. We did not achieve the first one of ADA compliance or enhanced ADA compliance for the CHESLA website, but it is something that we have on the radar screen for the next 3 years. The restructure of the CHIEFL website is nearing completion, and we hope to launch it early summer. And client portal is, we're beginning the steps towards that, and the infrastructure for that will come in the next strategic plan. But this data gathering process that we're working on now is trying to lay the foundation for the client portal. And then also significantly, we did go live with a new accounting system, which is called MultiView, on December 1st. So if you want to go to the next pillar, Deb. Innovation, the two goals in 21, continuing to try to be innovative. So I think a lot of what we've already talked about speaks to some of that innovation, but if you can just scroll down a bit, Deb. So the fact that we're being tapped for the Crumbling Foundation program, I think, is indicative of how CHIEFA is viewed in general as a resource for the state. We've been exploring an opportunity to participate in the creation of a health equity trust. So we were approached by an outside consulting group and EDFI in connection with that effort. And then the other proposals, I think the new market tax credits. But then also we have worked with the governor's office. The governor's office has legislation pending that would give CHESLA the ability to offer a broader array of certificate program loans. So those are the things that really we've done in the innovation pillar. And lastly, we have public engagement and accountability. And so you can see the 21 goals there. and I think I've these have been the accounting system I touched on, new performance evaluation system for the staff, implementing the internal audit recommendations, and the business continuity testing. So all of those, the first two are clearly in place. A couple of items on the second two are still underway. So that is the status for fiscal 21. I don't know if there are any questions on that. Otherwise, I will just roll into what we're proposing for the strategic plan for the next 3-year cycle. And so, as you know, I just wanted to, before we get to the slides, touch on briefly the process. And so, from a staff perspective, we engaged the staff in the process in a couple of meetings. We started with we had a guest speaker who gave some, you know, aspirational ideas about what CHIPA could be. We had a lot of staff participation with breakout groups, et cetera. As you know, we also had board retreat with board breakouts. So we really tried to engage all of our major players and build on also prior feedback we've received from clients, et cetera. And so I think we developed a process and we've tried to incorporate that feedback into the draft plan that you had in your board packets. So if you want to go to the 2 slides forward, Deb. So what I'm going to focus on in the presentation is really we're going to go down to ultimately the key initiatives. And so the strategic plan for fiscal 22 through 24 is really building on the existing vision and mission statements, value statements, and the already established strategic pillars from the last 3-year cycle. And I think if you've had the chance to take a look at this draft in your board packet, and you can read the description of the vision and mission, and as well as the pillars, they remain very relevant, very timely, and they really were made to be things that can persist over many years. And so we're keeping all of that in place. We did some minor tweaks to the vision, mission, and values. But otherwise, what we did is we came up with a list of initiatives that, rather than setting up initiatives per each pillar, which became kind of cumbersome for purposes of review and reporting back to the board, and because our initiatives really overlap multiple pillars, we've identified initiatives for the next 3-year period that are just comprehensively going to apply to all of the strategic pillars. So Deb, if you can scroll to the initiative section of the presentation. Okay, so initiative 1, which is as stated there, collaborate with other states, with the state, other quasis, and any other stakeholders to develop financing solutions to help address critical state issues. So the first 2 initiatives that you see there take a leading role in identifying and offering new and innovative or underutilized financial tools. And so specifically referenced there as examples, but obviously new things may arise in the course of the 3-year period. It's the New Market Tax Credit, the Connecticut program, the Health Equity Trust. You know, these are things, you know, other tools could emerge over the 3-year period. But what we're seeking to do is have at least 1 such CHIPA or CHIPA CBC new program implemented and operational by the end of the plan period. The second initiative, the second activity associated with this initiative is to develop targeted student loan refinance, or other education finance products that serve students and help address the state's workforce needs. So again, this, the Alliance District Teacher Loan Program fits in with that. As I mentioned, the state is seeking to broaden Cheswell's ability to fund certificate program loans. And then we're also looking at things like the feasibility of using loan rate discounts to encourage financial literacy, which is also a statewide goal. And the, and what we're seeking to do is implement at least two new programs, Cheswell related, by the end of the plan period.
Jeanette, this is Peter. Before we leave this page, under number one, identifying and offering new, innovative, underutilized financial tools, et cetera. If the crumbling foundation legislation comes to pass and we're involved there, would that be one of the things that would fit under that, that bullet number one?
Yes, it would be.
Okay.
Any other questions on these two activities? So the next page, just continuing on with the same initiative of collaborating with the relevant stakeholders to address critical state issues, and that's maintaining and developing relationships by increasing our interaction with a variety of entities. Clearly, this is not necessarily an exhaustive list, but this is something that's ongoing, and it's just a key part of outreach and being accessible. So going on, Deb, to the next page. The second initiative, broaden, assess, and communicate CHEPA's impact on the not-for-profit sector. So we have a number of activities associated with this. The first one, pursuing legislative changes that will allow us to better serve new and existing clients. And as we, you know, as you've heard, you know, legislative changes, as you heard from the, in the report from Dan earlier, you know, there, it's not easy to make things happen, and it's a long and arduous process, and you know, that can be thrown off by, you know, any many unexpected or political events. But the goal is to have at least one new proposal or program that's enacted into law by the end of the plan period. So that would not be counting the if the Teacher Alliance, the Alliance Teacher District gets approved this session, then that would not be the program that this would apply to. The second item is the conduct a structured client and prospect outreach effort to get a better handle and ongoing communication about client needs and getting feedback, so that we can build awareness of CHEPA products and help us develop new products. And so the specifics with regard to that is to have an annual schedule of client meetings that's really, you know, sort of coordinated with the budget cycles of clients so that we're able to work with them in time for their needs, conduct a client survey in the first year of the plan period, summarize client needs and feedback, and have a new program or modifications to existing programs implemented by the end of the cycle. And then the next one is in connection with grant programs, continuing to offer impactful grant programs consistent with strategic priorities and have the results that, that support that impact. Any questions on this slide? The next slide, Deb, it continues. We have three more activities associated with this. Educational programming for CHEPA clients, developing a comprehensive approach for gathering impact data on our programs. And we're trying to come up with a way that would be, you know, cut across all programs, whether it's bonds, loans, grant programs, CHEPA, CDC. And then the client portal will be the enhanced tool for data collection in that regard. And then lastly, in connection with this initiative, is the developing a comprehensive communications approach to build awareness of CHEPA services. So if you recall, one of the, it's referenced in the status report. I didn't highlight it specifically, but we did establish a chief of Twitter account in fiscal 21. And we've actually used it in conjunction with some of our legislative efforts. So it became a tool for us to actually reach out to specific legislators. So, but we want to go beyond that. So as you can see here, looking at some of these other things we might consider. So that's also things that we want to achieve in the next 3 years. Any questions on these? Okay. Moving on to the next initiative, it's the same initiative but pertaining to CHESLA. And so, again, this is something really a leftover from the prior strategic plan to have the, we previously called it an economic impact study. I'm referring to it as a workforce impact study, but it's the same concept. Obviously, if the Alliance District teacher loan program becomes law, there will be, a lot of collaboration with the State Department of Education, but it's something that we will want to get some significant press and make sure that all of our constituencies are aware of this new offering. And then lastly, on the CHESLA side is to work with the Governor's Workforce Council to finance post-secondary education in targeted careers. And this is part of the certificate program student loan expansion that they proposed. But we are also hoping to be able to develop new products like potentially income share agreements or other products that fit with new types of post-secondary education. Any questions? Okay, and then the last one with regard to CHESLA is doing more with the financial literacy portal of CT dollars and cents. It's an excellent tool, and we really haven't broadened the use of it enough. Next, we have the fourth initiative, continue to broaden the use of technology and to streamline. And as you can see there, build on what we've learned from the pandemic, use some of these hybrid solutions as appropriate, maximize, the use of certain technologies like document sharing, hybrid cloud services. And again, coming back to this notion of a client portal, we do have a limited sort of capacity of a client reporting mechanism built into our website currently. And this is to expand that and make it more robust and also easier to use from the client's perspective. Next slide, Deb. The fifth initiative is the organizational identity and culture. And so a key part of this is promoting a culture of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I think we've, there's been a fair amount of focus from an internal perspective in terms of, having speakers and raising everyone's awareness. But also, I think we want to make sure that we're extending that into what, some of the services that we're engaging vendors for, and also working with our clients. So making sure we're using diverse professional service providers and encouraging our clients to do the same. And then I think the other thing that's noteworthy on this is we've added it as item number 4 as part of organizational culture. This is some feedback we got from the board retreat to have at least 3 chief of board education programs and 2 CHESLA board education programs annually. Next slide.
Can you go back to that slide for a second?
Sure.
So number 3, the annual ethics training for staff and board. I mean, the board goes through that now as a requirement. I guess I just assumed that staff was already doing it. Is that correct or not?
Yes, it's already ongoing. And okay. So, you know,
for it's ongoing for staff as well.
Staff and board, yes.
Okay. And then I guess just a comment on number four. I'm thrilled to see that in there. I mean, you know that I'm a big proponent of professional education. And I'm thrilled that, you know, you and others at CHIFA heard the board during our retreat and that this made the cut. Number four here, the CHIFA board education programs and two CHESLA board education programs. I just want to say that I'm glad it made the cut and I'm glad that it's in there and I look forward to it.
Yes, I think it's definitely an important area of focus.
Professional development.
The next one, sustainable organization. Again, this is some of the things we've had in place previously, business continuity. But we're also in number two, adding an additional focus on being aware of our impact on the environment. Given with our doing things virtually, I think people have gotten into the mode of using less paper, doing less printing. So can we continue that? Can we work with our clients to do things that are also, you know, green bonds is something that's out there as and has been used by higher ed institutions where they're doing, you know, buildings that are constructed in a very environmentally friendly and low impact manner. And then the last one is something that is a little bit kind of aspirational, maybe, you know, may or may not actually be fully achievable, but certainly warrants exploring. And it's whether or not there are opportunities for CHIFA and CHESLA to develop, you know, additional sources of capital. One of the things that we're constrained by in terms of program development is, you know, we're limited. We have a limited amount of dollars to work with because it's the dollars that we can generate and that we can have on our balance sheet. So whether or not there are opportunities to develop other sources of capital to support CHIFA and CHESLA programs. So on the CHESLA side, it could be things like, you know, Connecticut Student Loan Foundation dollars, perhaps, which have already been used to support the scholarship program, for example, but maybe there are other ways. And then on the CHIFA side, it's just a matter of exploring, you know, what could occur with other entities, CDFIs or other capital financing types of entities that maybe that we could potentially collaborate with. So that is it on the strategic plan. And I want to certainly, I think from a, you know, everyone had some input and all of the efforts and work that went into putting this proposal together is certainly much appreciated. And hopefully it reflects the consensus of both the management staff and the board, but I'd be interested in any further comments or questions and otherwise hoping that it can be adopted.
Any questions, comments for Jeanette? Well, I'll just follow up on what I just said, in particular with that board, the professional development. I think I'm very happy that you and others heard the board during the retreat and it's included in the strategic plan. I think we can all benefit from, you know, continued board education, if you will. So I was glad to see it in there. And I don't know if there's other comments. Denise, does this require a vote for adoption by the board? Is it an action
item? Yes, it is an action item.
Okay. Are there any other comments? Questions for Jeanette? Well, hearing none, I'd entertain a motion to adopt the strategic plan as put forward by management. Is there a motion?
So moved. Mike?
Second, Daryl.
All right, we've got a motion, a second. Further discussion, questions, comments, anything need to be clarified? All right, hearing none, there's a motion on the floor to accept the staff's recommendation for a strategic plan. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? Thank you very much. Thank you, Jeanette, and thank you to your team for putting that together.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item on the agenda, we have a preliminary offering memorandum from Trinity. I think Bob Jandro, you're going to walk us through that?
Yeah, Peter, if I can. Sorry to interrupt, Bob. It's Steve Elbaum. My law firm, Robinson is Cole, and Cole is representing Chief of this issue. And so I'm going to recuse myself and then sign off, and Deb Galley is going to text me, and I'll sign back on.
Great. Thank you, Steve.
Before you do that, Steve, Bob, go ahead.
I was going to say that if I could please request that we do the University of St. Joseph first, as we have a member of management from the university attending today's call. So that way we can allow them to proceed on with their day, if we wouldn't mind first reviewing University of St. Joseph and then Trinity.
So do you want to do both of the final memos, University of St. Joe's and Winston Prep, and then Trinity? Is that what you're saying?
Or at least just
University. I would agree with that. It would probably be easier to go back and forth.
Okay. So let's do St. Joe's, Winston Prep, and then Trinity.
Okay. Thank you. So I'd like to first introduce Lucy Lucker. She is the Vice President for Finance and Administration at the University of St. Joseph. She will be available to answer questions after we've discussed the proposed financing. The university is seeking up to $18 million for the University of St. Joseph Series F. Proceeds from the bank direct placement with Berkshire Bank will be used to refinance the outstanding 2013 Series D. C as well as D bonds, which are also bank direct placements. The university does not carry a credit rating as all of its debt is privately placed. It's also will not be seeking a credit rating for the proposed financing. Both outstanding Series D, C and D bonds have a call date of June 17th, 2021. And the refunding will generate approximately $730,000 in savings for the university. The proposed structure of the bonds will have a 20-year amortization with a 10-year mandatory tender and a indicative fixed rate of 2.5%. Berkshire Bank has familiarity with the university, having underwritten a portion of the bonds to be refunded, as well as underwriting the university's previous financing in 2018. University of St. Joseph is still in the process of transforming itself into a co-educational university. They've shown good progress thus far, as evidenced by their growing application pool, but certainly has more work to do. Staff asked the board for its approval of the financing based on the anticipated savings that are to be achieved, as well as Berkshire Bank's intention, understanding, and underwriting of previous financings, which in the proposed financing, which exhibits its confidence in the university's being able to meet its current and future obligations. And with that, we'll open it up for questions.
And this is a direct placement with Berkshire Bank, correct?
That is correct.
Due diligence resides with the purchaser?
That is correct, sir.
Okay. Any questions for Bob? Questions, comments? All right. Well, I will entertain a motion to accept staff's recommendation for the financing for University of St. Joseph's. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second? All right. Questions for Bob or the representative from University of St. Joe's?
It's Kim. I have a question.
Please go ahead, Kim.
Is this debt going to be extended out longer than the original length? No, same. Okay. And no additional funding that they're looking to bring in, or it's just really like a refinancing? I can't hear anybody.
Yeah, I can't. Bob, did you hear the question?
I only caught a portion of it. There is not expected to be any additional financing. I didn't catch the first part of the question, however.
Nope, that was it. And I saw Mike move his head, so I'm assuming that the length of the loan is not changing. It's still going to finish at the same time.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you, Bob. Any other questions? All right, there's a motion. It's been seconded. All those in favor of accepting staff's recommendation on the memorandum for University of St. Joseph's, please say aye.
Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? Thank you. Motion carries. Bob, Winston Prep.
Actually, I'm going to do that one.
Okay, Michael?
Yes, Winston Prep. That was a private placement purchased by Citizens Bank back in 2012. That's about $9.7 million outstanding. It has a mandatory tender on April 13, 2022. The school has been working with the bank to extend the tender, which the bank has agreed to extend to 2032 and also renegotiate the interest rate. The current interest rate is 3.25%, and as of last week, the indicative rate was 2.82%. Now, because the change in yield is greater than 25 basis points, it triggers what's called the reissuance for tax purposes. And therefore, bond council needs to perform an updated tax analysis. There'll be amendments to the documents that we have to enter into. In addition to changing the interest rate, the bank has agreed to lower the debt service coverage ratio requirement, but increase the liquidity ratio requirement and eliminate the leverage ratio requirement. The security for the transaction will remain the same, which consists of gross receipts pledge and a mortgage. At the recommendation of bond council, they want us to seek adopting a new resolution for the reissuance because, as I said before, this is deemed a major modification for tax purposes and would feel more comfortable that we do adopt a new resolution. And in doing so, we would enter into an amended loan agreement and other documents, which will afford the school more favorable terms and opportunity to lower the interest rate. So therefore, we're recommending adopting of the resolution.
Okay, let's get it out there for discussion. First of all, is there a motion to accept the staff's recommendation for the reissuance and an amended loan agreement for Winston Prep? Someone like to move that?
I'll move it, including the adoption of the resolution.
Thank you, Steve. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Okay, so we got the motion out there. It's been seconded. Michael has reviewed the basics of the reissuance. Are there any questions for Mike? Discussion, concerns? Any questions?
Only question, it's Kim. The only question I would have is when they seek coverage ratio reduction, is it just because it was felt that it's not necessary to have such high term on this? I know that they shifted it and increased liquidity, which is good. But do you know if there was anything behind that, or they felt comfortable enough to reduce it?
I think that they felt comfortable to reduce it.
Okay.
And like you said, in doing so, they are getting additional coverage as far as the liquidity ratio.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else? All right, hearing none, there's a motion and a second to accept staff's recommendation on Winston Prep. All those in, Susan, did you have something?
No, sorry, sneezing.
Oh, okay. Sorry. All right, all those in favor accepting staff's recommendation, Winston Prep, please say aye.
Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? Thank you very much. Motion carries. Thank you, Mike. All right, now, Steve, I guess you can, I guess you're going to sign off, then come back on. Is that the?
Correct. Deb will text me.
Thank you. Okay. And so the next item of business is the preliminary memo on Trinity College. And I believe, Bob, you're going to be doing that?
That is correct, sir.
Okay.
So Trinity College is seeking to finance the cost of approximately $30 million in capital projects, approximately $1 million in capitalized interest costs, and to finance a partial refunding of their outstanding Series Q bonds, which has a bullet maturity in 2000, or a balloon payment or bullet maturity in 2026 of about $51 million. The partial refunding will not result in the college benefiting from net present value savings, but it does allow the college to restructure their debt obligation over a longer period of time, going out to 2051, so an additional 25 years. Typically, you know, staff would go through the memo and highlighting all different aspects of our credit evaluation, but I kind of thought I would change things up a little bit and perhaps just focus on what we perceive to be both the credit strengths and weaknesses that we came up with having put the memo together. Firstly, staff believe that Trinity's strengths begin with its strong reputation and brand awareness. Now, this is highlighted by its acceptance rate of 36%, which compares very strongly against the Moody's median of 62.6%. And even against the Chifa median, it ranks third behind Yale and Wesleyan. Trinity's strong student quality as measured by SAT scores are well above the national average. Trinity's matriculation is also the third highest in the Chifa medians or median against, again, Yale and Wesleyan. From a liquidity standpoint, in absolute terms, the college's overall level of cash and investments is viewed as a credit strength by the rating agencies. And more than $600 million, the college easily exceeds the Moody's A rating, A-rated median of $410 million. Another positive is the growth in the college's liquidity position. It's allowed its days cash on hand to increase 36.8% over the past 5 years to 93 days. Granted, 93 days does not compare favorably with the Moody's median of 382 days, but the college is showing modest improvement. Total cash and investments to debt, as well as operating expenses, also are among the highest ranked in the Chifa portfolio. Turning to weaknesses, operating performance is clearly, I think, on the top. As we note in our memo, Trinity's operating measures are more reflective of a triple B-rated institution rather than a single A-rated institution. The college is working to try and address this issue in a variety of ways. The first is through partnerships such as the one that they have with Infosys. Unfortunately, that partnership was put on pause as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. However, the partnership is expected to ramp back up in the fall as well as in the spring, with the expectation of generating a little more than $500,000. In the upcoming fiscal year. However, the long-term goal still remains that the partnership will get back on track and move towards netting approximately $1.5 to $1.8 million. Other ways in which the college is trying to address operational changes is by improving its career services for students, being more progressive in adjusting its curriculum, as well as placing more emphasis on attracting students from outside the Northeast. Another area of concern is just discounting and net revenue growth. The college's increased reliance upon discounting has both helped and hurt the college. It's helped by maintaining its enrollment levels, but it's come at a cost of producing lower net revenues. We're still working with the college to see what their longer-term plans are regarding the increased use of discounting. It's most likely that Trinity will try and identify and target students both domestically and internationally that require less financial assistance. The high competitive market is coupled with declining regional demographics for graduating high school seniors. Seniors is a challenge that's faced by all of the colleges that it competes with. Stagnant applications and enrollment. The college has communicated that they anticipate near record application levels, as well as the fact that enrollment numbers for the coming fiscal year are at or above budget. The endowment has a high concentration of donor-restricted funds. At less than 1% of the overall endowment, unrestricted funds remains extremely low. Trinity is in the quiet phase, however, of a capital campaign, which is hinted to be at over $400 million in size. That could potentially help offset this risk, but we're still waiting to hear more information on that. Overall, the proposed refunding will certainly help the college from a cash flow perspective and also allows the college to work on needed capital projects. Trinity is faced with both near and long-term challenges, just like its competitors. However, staff believes the benefits of the proposed financing helps the college to be in a better financial position by addressing the 2026 balloon payment. Trinity will receive updates to its credit ratings by June 15th, which is the day before our next board meeting, where staff will be looking to seek final approval. Staff anticipates that we'll be able to address and or answer any board concerns prior to the meeting. And certainly we could also similar to University of St. Joseph, could also make management of the college available if board feels that their presence would be needed or felt necessary. That's it.
I have a number of questions, Peter. Oh, we can't hear you. You're on mute.
I'm sorry. I was just saying that was a very good review. To the extent that there are questions now or leading up to the final review in June meeting, we can get those out. Kim, it sounds like you've got a few right now.
Yeah, I do. Could we please, unless you've already received this, could we please get preliminary numbers for fiscal year 2021? Because I'm going to anticipate that this pandemic has also probably had an impact on this. So even if they're preliminary projections as they would provide to, their board, then that I think would be helpful than us looking 2 years back is one thing. And do they build a five-year plan? Or do they plan out where they think they're going to be as we look forward? I don't know if you request that in projections, but that's something that is usually standard.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we're actually still waiting for information from the university, which is, we're still waiting for them to provide us with Appendix A, which basically should give us a better understanding of, where the university is at and what their plans are. In addition, they will be providing college will be providing information to the rating agencies, which will most likely go over all this information as well. So to the extent that we do get a rating agency packet or investor packet, we can certainly forward those along to the board.
Perfect.
Or at least summarize it in our final memo.
Right. Yeah, because this is too far of a look back.
Bob, this is Lawrence. Hello?
Go ahead, Lawrence.
Hi, I just want to make sure you guys can hear me. Bob, you know, with regards to the rating agencies, when is the next rating review? And, you know, has there been any discussions as to what the negative consequence might be if they were not able to go ahead and complete this extension of their maturity?
The meeting, I believe, with the rating agencies start next week. And again, we'll have we anticipate to have the ratings back actually the day before our next board meeting. thus far, it's been communicated to us from the investment banker that they do not anticipate the ratings are going to change for the new financing.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, that is I'm sorry, Kim. I was going to say that, you know, is a real good positive in terms of it. Sorry. Go ahead, Kim.
No, that is good news. And actually, I'm surprised to hear because I figured that I was going to hear that you're going to have another year of operating margin at another loss is what I based on the trend that we're seeing. But maybe things changed during the pandemic that they were able to do some recovery there. And the other thing is that their discount rate was definitely growing substantially. So which then falls to the bottom line.
Right. And from what I understand and have gathered from the investment banker is that it's likely that we're going to continue to see a slight increase in the discount rate going forward. And that's certainly something that the college will need to provide us more clarification on, which we hope to bring to the board to give a better understanding on what their plan is with regards to that.
Bob, a follow-up question would be about, you know, the capital campaign that you spoke of, that they're in the silent phase of this. When would we be able to expect any, you know, real outcome as to that campaign in terms of results? And you know, what are their plans? Are there plans to go ahead and use how much of those dollars towards the reduction of debt?
Right. I can. I don't have that information as of yet. I have requested it from the college, and as soon as we do get the information, we will definitely include that in the memo.
Okay.
I would think that with regard to the capital campaign, you know, they may be getting some cash right away, but most of it's going to be in pledges over, you know, 5, 7, maybe even 10 years. So there's going to be a little bit of a tail on anything that comes in through the capital campaign.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Peter. I guess what I'm hoping to understand in terms of the capital campaign is, you know, I mean, debt seems to be the issue here. And the level of debt is, you know, what percentage of that capital campaign is going to be directed, if any, towards that going forward.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, Bob, I think you got.
Sorry, one more question, Peter.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, in addition to, Lawrence is correct about that capital campaign and the focus of that and what those, because when there's always a focus within their capital campaign of where they want to make improvements, we're also seeing that the age of the plant is growing, which means they're not able to put funding back into their plant. And is this the money that they're going for, do we know if any of that is for improvements into their plant?
Yeah, Kimberly, to be honest, I don't have that information as of yet. Okay. Again, I have asked for more detail from the college in terms of, you know, how much they're looking to raise, which they didn't give me a firm number, but I've been hinted to believe that it's over $400 million. I've asked for a breakdown in terms of, you know, how much will be put into various avenues, and I have yet to get that information. But know, they are in their quiet phase. I do have some level of confidence that the CFO at the college will be forthcoming with that information. It's just a matter of getting it all together. And as I had mentioned, they're still working on putting together the information that's required for Appendix A, which in most cases provides a lot of this information. So
understand.
As soon as we get that, we'll definitely communicate it with the board.
Perfect.
Okay. Well, Bob, I think you've heard several questions from board members. If you can kind of track those down and either get the information out in advance of the of next month's meeting or just be prepared to address them at the June meeting, that'd be helpful.
Sure. And, you know, to the extent that that the information isn't as forthcoming as I anticipate, I'll certainly look to extend the invitation to management to be on the call if at the next board meeting if necessary.
Well, speaking as a board member, I certainly hope the information is forthcoming, and they are welcome to be on the call as well. But
right.
Yeah, because it puts you in a position if you can't answer the questions and we have these questions, then I'm assuming they're going to want to have approval. And if you're not able to answer them on their behalf, they're putting themselves in a position.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anything else for Bob on Trinity? Okay. We will look forward to that final memo next month, Bob.
Yep.
And now we have two committee reports. Mike, are you going to be doing the human resources finance?
Yes. Yeah, thank you, Peter.
Yeah.
Earlier today, there was a combined meeting of the audit, finance, and human resources committees, co-chaired by Mark Barherlach and myself as chairs of those respective committees. The combined committee heard the proposal by management for the fiscal year 2022 compensation and benefits budget, which begins on July 1st, 2021. In order to ensure a smooth process, this combined committee has traditionally reviewed and voted on the proposed budget in advance of management's further preparation of the full operational budget and then subsequent preparation to the board for consideration. The budget presented today for approval included total compensation and benefits, including healthcare, other insurance coverages, and other various fringe benefits. Highlights of the proposal included a market-based merit increase pool of 2.53%, subject to allocation according to recently completed performance evaluations. And then second, the addition of a new position to assist operations and finance functions. At a proposed $3.1 million, the employment cost budget comprises a significant portion of the total operations budget to be proposed to the board in June. The combined committees did vote in favor of the proposed budget, but this board should be aware that there was significant discussion regarding the importance of alignment with compensation increases for employees across the state at other agencies and those of other quasis as well. With that, that is essentially the report of the committees. And I would encourage anyone else who was on the committee who has anything to add to add that, or if the board has questions, I'm happy to answer those.
And just so everyone knows who wasn't on the part of the committee discussion, the committee voted to approve the inclusion of that budget in the overall budget. The board today doesn't have to approve the compensation human resources budget, but in June we will be voting on the entire budget, and that will be part of the overall budget. So are there questions for Mike or any of us that were at that committee meeting on the HR budget? Okay.
Great. Thank you.
As I said, the board will have, we will be voting on the entire budget next month at the meeting. Thank you, Mike. Grant committee review. Estella, hopefully you're still on the line and can give a quick review of the grant committee.
I'm muted. Thank you. I'm alive. I'm still alive. The grant committee met also earlier today, and we had a wonderful guest speaker, Liz Shapiro, from who is the Director of Arts Preservation and Museum, Connecticut Office of the Arts, Department of Community and Economic Development. She was the recipient of a grant, a CHIFA grant. She talked about the benefits, and she talked about the economic contribution that the arts do in the state, which is very significant. She also mentioned that the grant helped her to form a partnership and work together with another agency, the Council of Humanities, and how beneficial that was. So it was very gratifying to hear not only the impact of the grant, but you know, the other results of receiving that grant for from her. And again, she was very passionate about the grants. We review the targeted grant results, and they were very satisfying to see that they met the outcomes that they were intended to meet, and that they again contributed to the overall well-being of the state by working on workforce. The committee also approved the grant allocation for the next year budget, pending on the budget, of course, and it will be the traditional budget allocation of $1 million for the client grants, $1 million for the non-client grants, and $1 million for the targeted grant. We also approve that the targeted grants be given the opportunity to spend the funding that they receive in a two-year cycle, given the fact that sometimes given the work that they're proposing to do is difficult to accomplish in 1 year. And finally, we also approve the recommendation that the targeted grant for the next cycle continue to emphasize workforce, and especially with an emphasis on gap funding. In other words, the state will be getting funding from the federal government and other sources, but there are a number of areas that have gaps, including support for people who are seeking training and so on and so forth, and that the targeted grant allocate the resources to meet the gap that is present in many instances in programs that are offered to the underserved population that is usually unemployed. So again, a very robust meeting and very productive. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any questions for Estella on the grant committee actions or discussion?
Okay. Peter.
Yes, Denise.
Peter, this yes. is Denise.
Yes.
The board should approve the allocation of the $1 million each for each of the programs. Subject to the inclusion of grant funding in the FY22 CHIFA budget.
Okay, I was wondering if it needed to be done today or once the money is included in the budget in June.
We could wait till then if you want it. That's fine too.
It doesn't matter. I will look to you for the proper process.
We can wait. We can wait.
Okay. But just in June, we have to. When the money is approved in the budget, then we have to approve the three buckets that we are allocating the funds, correct?
Right.
Okay. All right, any questions for Estella? All right, one more item of business in the meeting package was a resume or vita for Wilson Luna, who is being nominated to serve on the CHESLA board. As I think everyone probably knows, appointments to the CHESLA board need to be approved by the CHIFA board. Hopefully folks have taken a look at his resume. He certainly comes very strongly recommended by an individual on the CHESLA board and also by one of our own board members, Estella Lopez. And again, hopefully folks have taken a look at his resume, and I would entertain a motion to appoint him to the CHESLA board. Is there a motion?
I move that Wilson Luna be approved for the CHESLA board.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second, Mike.
And we've got a second. Any discussion or questions on that nomination? Hearing none, all those in favor of accepting the nomination, voting Wilson Luna to the CHESLA board, please say aye.
Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? All right, thank you very much. I think that covers the stated agenda items. Is there anything else for the good and welfare of the group? Any other business? Hearing none, I would entertain a motion to adjourn until our next meeting on June 16th. Is there a motion?
Move adjournment.
Thank you. Is there a second? All those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you all very much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye, thank you.
Bye, everyone.